We often see the human figure standing with the signs of the houses of the zodiac placed from the head to the feet, and there doesn't seem to be any rationale behind it in the vertical representation. If the human figure is put inside the wheel, then the relation between Pisces and Aries becomes apparent. Now, if we go around from here, Aries represents the unfinited spiritual energy which appears in the human being as nervous energy, and that is resident in the head, in the individual. If it remains unfinite, it cannot work, it cannot do anything whatever, and therefore it must circumscribe itself, it must come in, turn and work and continue to work before it is allowed out. And this entrance, rotation and work preceding release is symbolized in the Taurian glyph, which then governs the neck. It was customary to wear a rope round the neck and keep it fairly tight, like a tight collar, so that if you were about to speak, you would be made conscious of the movement of the larynx to help inhibit. You may have noticed that some blue gentlemen, extreme conservatives, take the knot from the tie and move it slightly to the left of the larynx so that it's not exactly equilibrated. And that is to remind them that the sinister side, in heraldic terms, the dark side of the shield, means secrets of power must be kept. So the rope around the neck, the little tie on the barrister's tie, is symbolizing Taurus. It means the ability not to let out what is known, because if you let it out prematurely, that is, prior to its maturation, it cannot work and develop as a seed inside you. When a stimulus comes to the ear or to any part of the body, energy is added. The stimulus is energy. The energy goes inside. If that energy takes a short path onto the vocal apparatus and comes out in words, you have lost the energy. If you can persuade the energy to circulate and send down an inhibiting message so that the breathing mechanism doesn't start the operation of speech and rotate the energy, then the energy becomes your own, which means that every stimulus that comes to you is providing you with energy, providing you don't let it out. Every individual, every finite being is trying to knock every other finite being off center until they realize what they really ought to be doing, namely inhibiting energy so that it can create a seed of a new body out of the material body. You know, St. Paul says first a physical body, then a spiritual body. We have to have a physical body. There's a symbol of Saturn, which means compression, contraction. And that physical body is a drift center for matter, which is a force inertia, which establishes a constant center for receiving stimuli. When the stimuli come to that body, they add energy to it. If the body can rotate the energies, it grows substantially within itself another body of a different order. If it lets the energy go out, it cannot grow. But if it contains the energy, this is the meaning of the religious continence, containingness, if it can contain it in its finite self, that it is contained and that it is finite causes it to change its frequency. It steps it up so that the quality of the awareness of that being is increased. If when somebody says something to you, an insult or something, you bounce immediately back with a response. You haven't really understood what that person was doing. But if you can retain the energy of the stimulus, which tends to come out as reaction, and turn that back upon itself, it changes its frequency. And then you become aware of what the person was trying to do, which you couldn't have known if you'd have reacted immediately. And the ideal is to stop reaction for any stimulus, whatever, until you have the power to be completely non-expressive in the presence of a stimulus. When you are completely able to inhibit, that fact is evidence that you have created another vehicle, another level of frequency within yourself. And this allows you to vibrate in tune with the field of the Absolute. We use the letter Aleph, the Hebrew letter, or the Greek letter Alpha, which is Taurus, to symbolize this kind of vibration which has become conscious for an individual at its highest level, conscious of the horns or inherent duality of the Absolute. The duality of the Absolute is that it has a power aspect and a substantial formal aspect. Every being, whatever, can be considered as power and as form of a substance. So that we shift a reference frame. The Absolute Reality has a power aspect and a formal substantial aspect. Insofar as it produces changes, we posit it as form. Insofar as it occupies space and produces tangibles, it is substance. Insofar as it is recognizable, it is form. But these are merely aspects of the unrepresented Absolute. So in Taurus we find it is said to control the neck and the trapezius muscle, which fastens to the back of the skull and goes down here. And when a person has a belief that they are being imposed upon at all by an external stimulus, and they are not allowed to speak out without controlling the energy in some measure, then the energy circulates and goes into this muscle, the trapezius. Now trapezius is Torah, and pies, I'll put it here, this is pies, there's the Greek version of it. This means squeeze, and this means law. The law squeeze muscle, it means. The Torah pisius means that muscle that catches it when the law is imposed on you from outside. So fibrositis of the trapezius always arises when somebody is being put on, and unconsciously the energy is leaking trapezius, and it contracts, and they hold the neck like that. Now you notice the spontaneous reaction of the champion stiff-necked people of the world. My people is a stiff-necked people. If they don't like it, they contract the trapezius and unconsciously throw off the burden. This is the cause of Guinness shrugging. It's the automatic leakage into the trapezius when they don't wish to accept the burden. Now, if you do accept the burden, but unconsciously and not deliberately, it contracts and becomes very stiff. It can become like, feels like steel sometimes. And no amount of massaging externally will remove it until that person becomes aware that they are really responding to a mental burden situation which is allowing leakage of energy into this muscle group. Now, every muscle group in the body has certain connections with ideational processes in the head. So particular disorders appear throughout the body in different ways according to the type of idea that is being stimulated by the situation. So the Taurian position is to remind us that we have to learn how to inhibit, and particularly to inhibit the tongue. And remember that if we were to represent a human being, there's the... Here is the Hebrew letter R. If we were to write it in English, we'd recognize it. We just turn it around that way. This represents, as you can see from this diagram, the human tongue. Resh means ruling power. And it goes down and right down to the bottom and then wiggles about and goes out. These wiggles are not quite anatomically correct. Are you good enough? Now, all of this is called the serpent in all the great religious systems. This is the worm that dies not. It is the vortical center of appetite, which has evolved for itself an articulator of its desires. So, all down here, I think we'll put the diaphragm in, if I know where we are. Everything below the diaphragm is unconscious appetite, and when it comes above the diaphragm, it becomes polarized as liking and disliking. And when the same energy, which is going on like the peristalsis down here, a ripple appears up here and comes on the tongue and speaks out of the belly of the whale, speaks Jonah. Now this is the articulator or little jointer. He's the fellow that tells you what is required down there. But up here is another world. Remember, the skull is hard and therefore under the dominion of Saturn, and the brain is very soft and therefore under the dominion of Jupiter. This is God the Father and this is the devil. This is the hard skull containing God the Father, and God the Father is sending messages down the spine trying to choke this serpent. If we cut certain nerves here on certain lower animals so that no message from here gets down here, all this thing goes on eating, and it will eat until the stomach actually bursts. So we know from that fact that there's an inhibiting message being sent down here, so that when it's at a certain degree of tension to fullness, it sends another message up: don't open the mouth anymore. So we see that, in fact, a human being is two systems. An appetite system there, which has learned to articulate what it wants. It's a cunning serpent. You may notice that in some people's tongues there is a sort of groovy depression in the center. In fact, part of bel canto technique is to acquire a groove in the back of the tongue. And some people have a very thick tongue like this, with no grooving. Now, those people with a thick, formless tongue, like a blob in the bottom of the mouth, are generally not good at articulation. And the others with a very mobile tongue are giving evidence of the nervous knitting to the tongue. The messages from the serpent below are reaching a high degree of conscious expression. All this department is the appetite, and it has climbed up in here to express itself, and it has invaded territory it doesn't really belong to. It all below the diaphragm is unconscious. Down there there are terrible urges, undetermined. They get through the diaphragm and climb up and become emotions. I like it and I don't like it. And if they climb higher still, they become words on the tongue. Meanwhile, another force with the star of the macrocosmic logos shining into it and another star, the five-pointed star, shining through the five senses, are at war with the serpent. This serpent is an unconscious drive. He doesn't know anything other than that which he actually hits at the moment. The message is from outside, from the five senses. Come in here and record the formal situation that was present when the appetite centers were indulging themselves in certain ways. And it gives a list in here of all formal situations in which pleasure and pain have been experienced. And it grows in its fullness of the record up here by the pain specifically. The pleasure one causing a return of energy down to the naughty old worm. So here we have the five sense messages. What you see, there's a drawing pin, you sit on a drawing pin. You have a visual image of a drawing pin and a sensation down below. And this sensation is clamming up here and becoming pain. That is recording up here and fusing with the visual image of the drawing pin, saying that such and such a shape or form means so much pain. So there's an inhibiting factor from the five senses fighting back onto the worm. But that old worm, that intestinal worm, is driving the whole organism continuously into experience, and thereby adding up the five sense data, which will inhibit the serpent driving into the situation. So it breeds dialectically out of itself, out of its own empirical experience, a formal record that makes it progressively more cautious, until in the end it can defeat itself and sit down and high frequency that continuously goes through the whole organism. But the worm cannot be conscious of that macrocosmic influx until it has been inhibited by the five sense structure. The five sense structure must inhibit the mighty serpentine desires and make them so cautious. As it says in the Tao Te Ching, if I had the great chopper, I would hesitate to use it. He must become so cautious, so balanced, that he becomes very, very sensitive. He's got his five-pointed experience filed on the brain. And when he's balanced it and dare not move, he goes into a negative condition. And either he dies, or he decides to become super cautious and to learn principles of action which are universal instead of general. The five-pointed star gives you only the general rule. And the general isn't good enough. You want a universal rule. And David Hume proves that the general is only the particular used over a series of incidents. The general is the particular used over a series. And it will not do for all situations. So he has to stand still, and in that standing still he becomes aware that the whole organism is already penetrated throughout its whole being by that symbolized by the six-pointed star. You remember that that was made of two triangles, one symbolizing fire and the other water, one symbolizing energy and the other substance. The fire one means energy and the water one means substance. There are two aspects of one reality which cannot be known as it is. It can only be known formally by the meaning of the word known. Remember KN, closure, negation, zone, and the overlapping of energies. To know a thing is to deal with a finite aspect. So we want something beyond knowing. This six-pointed star, this double interlaced triangle, tells us the top aspects of reality that we can consider before we transcend consideration. Consideration means with they see there the stars, the astral processes that are suffusing the whole body. You can call this cosmic radiation if you like at its very, very grossest level. But the cosmic radiation measured by scientists today is not that. It is far grosser than the stuff we're talking about. This is a very, very fine energy travelling through the whole organism. If the appetite centre, the serpent, which has to be lifted up on the cross, like Moses lifted it up, towered, by the application of the five sense general law, until it is completely negated, so that the whole egoic drive of the serpent is brought to a standstill, in that standstill is the possibility, because it is like death, of a sprouting of a new consciousness. Standstill is the name of one of the most important Chinese ideographs, where the whole being has been negated so that its individual consciousness is convinced that it is powerless, and it becomes profoundly depressed as an individual. It is the state of the corruption that the alchemists talk about, that precedes the awareness in the falling into death in despair that there is something behind all this, a very fine energy going through it. Then, as we become aware of that energy going through it, we let go of the egotistical stress, we let go of the empirical self built by the five senses. The egoic self is built by the five senses, and we discover another thing, the meaning of the word self, non-egoic. It's a good thing to use the Latin ego for it, because the Romans, being gross materialists, put into their word for I the gamma, the hard G, which symbolizes gross materiality. So although the E letter signifies spirit, this means gross establishment. And this means following the G, coming to nothing. So already to call themselves ego is to say I come to nothing through an overstress of gross material. There are other words for it. The English word I is diphthong, I, in R and E, and signifies energy and a point of application. The German for I, ich, the dot is first, and this is a compound KH, and means effort and overcoming. So a German feels he must overcome. An Englishman feels that he is applying energy to a particular. A Frenchman has his difficulty at the beginning. This is his dot, and it becomes his you. He is applying energy at the beginning, and it becomes feeling. This is his attempt at rationality, and this is his emotionalism. An Italian says io. There's his nothing, and there's his little I in the middle of it. Each nation conveys in the word he uses to signify himself his attitude towards being. There is another word, we take the Sanskrit aham, which says that the primary energy spiritualized itself, gave forth another energy which then substantialized itself. So we see the concept of aham in Sanskrit means an energy gathering itself together and giving forth another energy that implies two bodies, substantializing itself. Each nation has a word, and that word is the symbol of its own attitude towards the self. Now, the self, with a capital S, remember S is originally a serpent. So if we write S-E-L, which means soul, and the F on the end means the spiritual issue of the soul. The soul is Saturn, the contraction, and the F is coming out of it. It's the evolving spirit of egotism. If we close the serpent, we get the initial medial S of the Greeks. When we begin, we have to finite ourselves. When we're in the middle, we're still finited. And when we come to the end of a word, we are free when we come to the end of the process. We'll keep this fellow down here now.
Okay.
Well, we're coming back to consider the meaning of the macrocosmic influx to the man. He doesn't know it exists, but just like radio waves in this room now and going right through our bodies without our consciousness as individuals, so this absolute force, not solar, not side zero, an absolute force, is coming through the organism continuously. And it is that force that is organizing the body and keeping the body healthy. If that force and that force alone were allowed to operate, with no egoic interference, it would be in perfect health and it would be a body of light. It would not be a gross material body at all. And that is the meaning of the transmutation of the base metal, Saturn, lead, into the gold of the solar will. We have to turn corruption, covetousness, individuated egotistic gram into radiating will prepared to give like the sun gives light. That is the transmutation of lead into gold. And that has to be done in the human being, because in no other being can it be done. Only the human being can do it. This energy must be realized, made real in the body. It is there, but it is not real until we can differentiate it and link the differentiated together. The re is the king, and the al is the god. God is my king is the meaning of the word real. Differentiation, link. To differentiate, to analyze, to break into bits, and then to synthesize what has been broken together. That is religion. The old serpent that ties himself up. Religion. This is the real meaning of the back tying, the lig ligaturing. But the word real implies that you have differentiated yourself consciously and have synthesized the differentiated elements. And only then are you real. So, although this is running through us all, it isn't real for us until we have differentiated all our parts so that they harmoniously vibrate with that fundamental. That is there all the time. It is that which gives the message to say, let's form some teeth for baby before it's born, so that when it comes out it will be able to bite a bit and let mama know that she hasn't lived in vain. And behind it, it says, let's make some more teeth so that when we finish with mother, we'll be able to bite into something more fiercely. These things are prepared before they're actually used by the individual, by this force symbolized by the logos. If we allowed it to operate without any interference whatever, it would put us all into order. This is what is behind a movement like Sabud or something like that. It's the attempt to allow this to speak. And if you could allow it to speak properly, then everything would become organically correct. We are in process of evolving, and there is interference from generalities, apperception masses from the five senses, which have been created by appetite, by egotistical self-expression, crashing into situations, suffering terrible pains and recording the pains up here as situations to keep out of. As we are keeping out of the situation, we are restraining ourselves, becoming progressively more and more saturnine. And as we are becoming more and more saturnine, we are becoming less and less and less capable of responding to this. But as we are becoming more saturnine, we are also increasing the pressures inside ourselves. These pressures can be released only by incandescence. This may be partial and unprepared for, and we call it insanity. It may be total and prepared for by a series of exercises, and it isn't insanity at all. It is insanity, health within. the difference between in as a negative and in as an internal fact. So we have to drive ourselves through our painful experiences to the point where our egotism becomes full. We become full egotists instead of wishy-washy, Laodicean, Laodicean egotism. It must be made conscious, and we can only do it by driving ourselves into painful situations and to discover that this worm down here doesn't want a painful situation at all. He just wants a record up there of painful situations to dodge so that he can go in and get his clever tongue around what he wants and bring it down here again. This is the old serpent, and it is the precipitate of an eternal energy. That energy is the source in which the soul of man is rooted. Alchemically, it is generated between Mars and Venus. And we said before that these two triangles symbolize energy and water, energy and substance, fire and water. Mars symbolizes energy, but now individuated, and Venus the individuated passivity of the substance of the being. And in between those two, between the substantial and the desire energies, the soul is born. Which means that when an egg is fertilized and begins to develop, it goes through certain stages. And at a certain stage, when the fluids of the body are prepared, a nervous impulse comes down. That is the fire. And at that point, and not before, where the nervous energy flows down for the first time into that organism and penetrates the fluid aspect of it, at that moment the soul is conceived. Not the form, which is going to impart it to it later. The soul is born at that point. We would call it the quickening of the child, the mother. Suddenly, instead of being a mere vegetative structure, deriving energies from outside, from its mother, it suddenly becomes a centre in its own right. Everything has been developed by the orders of the absolute Logos and brought to a stage where the chemistry of the fluid aspects of the body and the electronic and other forces in the nervous system are perfectly balanced, and there's a sudden discharge of energy from the nervous system through the fluids in the body, which is exactly analogous to the incandescence produced by the contraction of egotism. So at that moment, a light flashes through the whole organism and it becomes a soul. And from that moment, it will start moving about, stretching its arms, closing its whatever it is, or opening it if it's shut, and so on. And from that moment, it is a soul in its own right. And therefore, it is very important what a woman is doing during the period prior to that, because her emotion creates chemical situations in her body, and through her body, in her blood, with which she's supplying the chemistry to the child's chemical predisposition is established. So that when the flash comes, the temperament, the balance, is determined in the quickening. So that really the foundation of the character of that child is already set by the emotional state of the mother. So obviously the father, knowing such facts, would put a certain kind of energy into the mother, physically and mentally and so on, to keep her balance so that the child's chemistry will be balanced at that moment. The child would then be a product of the father's intent, his reason balancing, and the mother's will to produce this thing. The father is the nervous energy in him, and the mother is the fluid aspect, and the two together produce the child, which then becomes a soul. Now after another period of development of a few months, it is extruded, and at the moment of extrusion it breathes air for the first time, and the shock of the air upon it acts like the shock of the nervous energy did internally, and lifts it into another phase of being. It then becomes an intellectual being. Before it was a soulish being. And the essence of the soulish life is sentiency, simply feeling. But when the air is inbreathed, it suddenly becomes an intellectual being. It judges. And remember, the first shock of that is a pain. And we've said there is no thought without a pain. So when that air rushes down there and those lungs are inflated, certain processes occur and the appetite, which was previously fed through the navel there, suddenly becomes aware that something has happened in here, and the accent of consciousness is shifted momentarily over there for the shock. And at that moment a pain is experienced and the energy flies into the head and records itself there. So that the whole constellation of forces on the child, again, is a determinant. It is now an intellectual soul. If we consider the form in the soul, from the macrocosmic logos, it is called the spirit of the soul. Absolute. If we consider the form from the five senses, as they were stimulated at the first impact of air, that is called the spirit of the soul individual. Some people who cannot, I'm talking about theologians, cannot understand what is the meaning of a twofold and threefold division in the Bible. There's a simple one, soul and body, and there's another one, spirit, soul and body. And the theologians argue quite a lot about it. The real meaning is that the soul and the body are in opposition as energy to substance. But the form of the soul, the stimulus that it receives, which leaves formal traces in it, is called the spirit of the soul, the formal content of it. And that is either from the five senses building up a pseudo-self, the egoic self, or the true self of the absolute coming through it. So if then you identify with all the empirical data through your five senses, then you are an individual of the lower egoic level. But if you identify with the absolute logos, then you are a super individual. That is, you are beyond that egoic consciousness, but nevertheless you have a self that is a salt. Because you are a compressed being, a saturnine compress, which has produced a flash. Flesh and flash are etymologically the same word. If there were no flash of nervous energy into the fluids in that body, it could not become flesh. It would corrupt in utero, and that would be the end of it. That flash must come. We said before, there is only the one process of generation of a star, a sun, a planet, or anything else. So now, in the diaphragm, we have a membrane stretched across the body, specially grown as a product of two forces, one pressing down and one pressing up. The serpent is trying to get up to dominate the situation. So in this diaphragm, through this thragma, it says that above there is reason. This is diaphragma. And thragma is pida, reason. And the gut is the gross material fact, and the is the closure of that substance, substantial aspect, gross aspect, ga. Pira is the fire of the serpent, now rationalized. So this is exactly the same as the firmament, or the lower firmament, in Genesis 1. Everything below that is hell. It is literally hell. That is to say, if a human being were made conscious of the chemical processes of digestion and so on, to him it would be a hellish torment, unbearable. You know that as long as you are functioning properly, you are unaware of a process going on in the stomach or in the duodenum or in somewhere else. And if you become aware of it, something has gone wrong. Everything below the diaphragm is hell. It is specially held in by the forces of this absolute logos who have compressed this serpent, which was the original will to dominate the absolute, and had in it an inherent dialectical self-contradiction. that it wanted to be finite, and then it wanted to eat the infinite, which is illogical. It has appetite, and the appetite can grow, it can extend, but because it is finite, no matter how long it grows, it can never eat infinity. So it is doomed, no matter how much it may extend its dominion, dome eye on the wicked serpent. There is always something beyond it, and this something beyond is the source of its eternal dissatisfaction. So no matter how big it may extend, its worm dies not. It is an eternal appetite. And because it is inherently a contradiction to try to defeat infinity and eat it, there is, because of its finite nature, a necessary finite radius, there's the centre of it, of its aggression against the infinite. This finite radius is the diaphragm in the individual human being. So he bangs up against there, and this force meets him equal and opposite on the other side. On that point comes the solar plexus.